This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. Produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in my collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was on his
Lizmark.
Name?
Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place with a big buzz play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what you're
our opening.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
So the FCC won't let me be, or let me be me, so let me see. They try to shut me down on MTV, but it feels so empty without me. So come on and dip, come on your lips, fuck that, come on your lips, and come on your tits and get ready. Cause this shit's about to get heavy, I just settled all my lawsuits. Fuck you, Devin! Now this looks like a job for me, so
Place to Be Nation! How the hell are you? Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And alongside me, as always, is my PIC, Mr. Scotty C. How are you?
You know, Cowboy Senior, enough of your goddamn Patriots... Oh, sorry, JR. He seems to be the only guy I talk to on a podcast anymore.
The Colts are trash.
JR, always a pleasure. It's good to have you
Tommy's
back.
Tommy's going to have another 350 yards.
The Colts have no balls. We'll talk more about them later on in the week. Oh, they beat the Broncos, though.
They did. We'll see what Senior has to say about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that Wednesday night. We will talk about that on the newest episode of the Sports Evolution. JR, good to have you back, brother.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation. What number are we on? I don't even know.
386. It's been a while since we recorded, obviously. I mean, I hope everyone enjoyed the Halloween special. Seems like we've been gone for quite a while. It's been a while since we've been in the vault. It's been about a month.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back there. So, how have you been?
I've been well. Busy. It's been a busy fall for both of us. You've been, patrolling the amusement parks of the world. Mm-hmm. You should have your own travel channel show.
And all these trips to the West Coast back to back is a
look at you.
A lot of travel.
You're like Kobe. Well, except
without the rape.
Playing a better team. I think my favorite vacation picture that I've seen was the one of Big Al giving the Tongan death grip to Goofy. I think
yes,
that,
he was.
Is he Goofy or Pluto? I might have been Pluto, actually.
You know, it's funny, too, because I come on here and I trash customer service and everything else. But there's actually, I had some good customer service on this trip. It was all pretty good. The folks at NBC Suites, I want to give shout-outs to. They were all great. Mm-hmm. Southwest were very helpful. One guy at the Doubletree was super nice because the day before we left, I returned my car to the rental place and he actually followed me or he led me there to the airport and then drove me right back in the shuttle to the hotel.
Oh,
so that was really nice of him.
Very nice. Yeah.
But then things a little shaky the day we left. So our flight was 6:20 Pacific time. So we were up at like 3:30 in the hotel room and I had a ton of stuff. I mean, just a ton of stuff. And this guy, the shuttle driver, different guy from the night before, drives us over to the airport. And at this, like, the Ontario, California airport is, like, from, like, 1983. You know, it's, like, very just old and outdated. Like,
the walls have that, like, cigarettes glazed to them. And
yeah, it's everything is just ass backwards. Like, nothing's streamlined. So the shuttle drop-off is on this curb, and then you have to cross a street to get to the hotel. And normally that seems fine. But when you're traveling with a double stroller, an 8-month-old, a 3.5-year-old, like 7 bags, 2 car seats. It's just a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I try and pile it on. I waste $5 on that stupid cart. And the guy just like tosses, like leaves the bag on the sidewalk and just leaves, right? I'm like, you could have helped me cross the street. So My wife pushes the kids across the street in the stroller, and I'm trying to just push this stuff across the street on this rack. And I mean, I have to be on YouTube somewhere, I'm sure, because it's, you know, it's like 5 a.m, bags are falling, like literally off the cart into the road.
The Curb, like, just, music should have been playing in the background.
Oh, it was absurd. I mean, one guy's just sitting there, like, watching me, like, from his car, just shit spilling everywhere. We were borrowing luggage. If it was mine, I would have whipped it through the window of the airport, probably, but it was just really annoying. So then we get through to security. Well, we do the, like, the curbside check-in with, I mean, this guy that was, like, 1950, like, you know, was probably when he started working there. And so he prints the stuff out. He's like, you know, all right, have a good trip, blah, blah, blah. So we go into the security, and they didn't print the boarding pass for my son. And so I feel like, you need that. So I had to leave security, go all the way back out to the curbside check. And the guy's like, no idea. He's like, well, you didn't give me the paperwork. I'm like, what paperwork? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, I literally printed everything that Southwest provided me on the internet, and this is what I'm giving you. And then luckily some other guy knew what to do and came over. He's like, no, you're going to do this, this, and this, and print it out. But I'm like, how do you work here and print these boarding passes, and you didn't know you had to do this? Like, it confounds me. Like, I couldn't even imagine if I was in Logan and that happened, where I had to run all the way back out to the front. Like, luckily we were in this, you know, mini airport where it was like a 3-minute run or walk from the security to the front. So,
right.
So everything went really well until that, like, hour of calamity was just way too much for me.
At least it was at the end.
Yes, at least it was at the end. But that sets the stage for a long travel day home when that stuff's happening at 6 a.m. But so yeah, I loved all the everything until that guy set the tone for the morning with the not helping me carry those bags across the street. I mean, he could have literally saved me so much trouble by just carrying like a bag across the street for me. I was like one bag too many for me to push on that cart with the car seat. So, but if you find anything on YouTube like angry man, you know, pushing luggage at Ontario Airport, that's me probably out there.
You think somebody might have been, like, filming you secretly?
I would have been.
Or, like, look at this clown.
I mean, I definitely would have been. Like, that's how embarrassing it was. Like, I'm like, this is awful. I look like a jackass right now. And I was fully aware of it. I really fight hard not to ever put myself in true jackass positions, but that was one where it's just absurd.
Oh, God. I'll have to look this up as the day progresses, as the show progresses. But yeah, busy fall for all of us. And we appreciate PlaceToBeNation.com's patience. But shows come out. And we'll have a good week this week, have a good week next week. Getting close to the holidays, JR. You know what that means. It's our favorite time of the year here at Place Be Podcast.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's coming up. Halloween is gone. Christmas is coming.
Yep, and you know, here at PlaceBeNation.com, we always have something in the works.
Mm-hmm.
So stay with us, because our Halloween, our Christmas spectacular, we've had some good ones over the years.
Yes. So last year was the epic one.
Yeah, last year was the great one. You know, Santa Milton, Jesus Flanagan. It's very impressive.
All of them. So we'll see if they're back this year.
Yes.
We also have a new tournament coming. Stay
we
with
do?
Us. Yeah. We'll announce that halfway through the show. After the break, we'll announce what that is. So stay tuned for your fans of our website. It's been a while. I think the wrestling theme songs is our last one.
Yes, which was won by was it Real American or was it Austin? Was it Stone Cold?
I think
it was one
Hogan.
Of those two.
Yeah, I think Hogan won.
I think it was Real American. Yeah.
So that's that. So why don't we dive in?
Airline baggage failed.
Hey, what is going on here?
Okay.
No one's talking to you, Chubby. Airline baggage fail, busted, caught on camera. No, that can't be it.
It could have been.
Amazing. Oh, no, that's in Amsterdam. I typed Ontario. Maybe I got to type California. Maybe I'm getting too many Canadians. I want to see Aaron George pushing around.
Hey.
Let's see. Airline baggage fail. No, that was a year ago. It's got to be something, within the last week.
Yeah.
Right, I'll have to look. I don't know who was there at 5 o'clock in the morning, but
a lot of people. Right.
Really?
Yes.
Busy in a little airport, huh?
I spent most of the week trying to hook up with Grant Owens and Mark Claire, but we couldn't make it happen. It's,
oh. You
know, because it's funny, because if they're, like, visiting Rhode Island, I'm like, oh, I'll be there in 10 minutes. But, like, California is like,
yeah.
Wow, we got to figure out. It's like a 3.5 hours.
He'll be there in 5 hours.
They were, like, all in Southern California. Like, we weren't even that far, you know? And it's like, it's all ridiculous time frames.
Bummer. We will have Mark Claire with us, though, in the very near future. Like, tonight, JR, as we heard Big Tubbo there, it is back in the big steel box known as the Vintage Vault. And tonight, a show that most of it you think you remember, but some of it you definitely forgot. I certainly did when I watched it today. But we are going to go Minnesota Hog Wild.
Is that a saying?
No. I just wanted to, it was Minnesota Wild, of course, is an NHL team, and I just wanted to add Hog because it was a former WCW pay-per-view. Tonight. Yes.
I mean, if we were in, like, South Dakota, I'd get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the prom. Coming up here in the, that would have been funny if anybody knew it was from South Dakota. If I said Wisconsin, at least Willie would have laughed.
Yeah.
You know, Wisconsin 58. Coming up here on the Vintage Vault, inside the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Judgment Day.
It's a Judgment Day.
2005.
Followed by Judgment Night with Ari Gold.
The end is... Oh, that's Armageddon, actually.
When Jerry McPiven was still bald. Judgment
yes.
Night.
Judgment Night when he was still bald. Pre-Chia. Okay.
Have we talked about that? I feel like we've talked about that on here.
What's that?
Judgment
Jeremy
Night.
Piven's hair?
Judgment Night. 1993,
oh,
Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding, Dennis
Leary. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The what is it? The S, not SUV. The
camper.
The camper through the ghetto of, was it St. Louis, I think?
Chicago.
Chicago. Terrible. Disley was, that was when he was at his acting best. And if you caught the last two seasons of Rescue Me, that window closed quickly.
You know, I was a big fan of Judgment Night. Steve Neumeister. He made me watch it one night in his apartment.
I only see Steve like once a month if I'm working at
I'll mention Judgment Night to him.
I will, but I only see him once a month when I see him on like when I'm there on Friday nights till like 11. First thing he says with his very thick Bridgewater accent, "How's Rosero?" That's what he tells me when I see him. And I, of course, every time I see him, I talk about two people, you and, of course, the ubiquitous Mr. His name just escaped my mind as I was thinking of elections. Our pal there. Mr. Wrote the books, Lyndon LaRouche, your pal there.
Rich Rubino?
Mr. Rubino, yes, Mr. Rich Rubino. I always meant
he
was
him
on. He's very popular. His own, should have him and Claire on his podcast. That could be very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, May 22nd, 2005, live from the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Jesus, JR, I don't think we've been here, God, like 5.5 years, I think. On pay-per-view? I don't believe we've been here since...
SummerSlam 99?
Since SummerSlam 99. Yeah, right? 2004?
Sounds right.
I don't think they were there in 04, right? No, day 04 was in California. No, I don't think they've been in Minneapolis since. For a pay-per-view. I'm sure they've been there for Raws. Your attendance, 9,500, which...
You're right, yep.
Is...
And they're not there again for pay-per-view until 2010.
Wow. That's weird. Nice building, too. 9,500, your attendance, which I believe was a sellout. I think a lot of the arena was cut by the big globes in the way that Judgment Day, set
it holds 20,000 for concerts, 17,500 for hockey, 19,356 for basketball.
All right. But they said, according to both Graham and I think Wiki, 9,500 was a sellout.
Hmm.
So maybe they were, maybe
they really
the
cut
set
off a lot.
I know they must have cut off a lot of seats. Your buy rate, 0.66, and your announcers at ringside, of course, Michael Cole and Taz. Before we continue, JR, before we get to the Sutton report, we'll let it stall as long as we can in case he thinks he forgot. Something very interesting as this show opened. I can't remember the last time it happened, but the opening of this show, I'm sure you watched it before you went away. I watched it today. It is the first time in a while that I can remember that the show did not open with pyro. Like the logo came up, you know, and now SmackDown presents Judgment
Day.
Really?
There's no pyro? I don't think
And
I
it went right into
that.
The opening match, unless it was edited. No, it wasn't, because Cole, as the first match was coming down the aisle, did, hey, everybody, well, hello, everybody, welcome to, he did it in the middle of that.
Right.
I have a feeling it was because if you look at the set, the globes were like, I don't know, probably paper mache. Something they were probably a fire hazard, most likely.
Yeah, maybe.
So they eschewed the pyro for the opening of this paper. JR, our Sutton report.
Well, we can eschew on this.
Mm-hmm.
WWE champion John Cena, United States champion still Orlando Jordan. We have new tag team champions. We'll get to that in a moment. same cruiserweight champion Paul London.
Mm-hmm.
We had one release. Luther Reigns, released on May 11th, had 15 TV matches, 15, 23, and 3 on TV. I'm sorry, he had 115 matches total. That was his record on TV, 15, 23, and 3. So big
not bad, actually. Only 8 under?
Yeah,
I thought it
was
worse.
Well, you get that little push in 04 with
yeah.
Part of Team Angle. Or no, was he? Was it Team Angle?
No. Yeah, it was him and...
Jindrak.
Jindrak, yeah.
301 episodes of SmackDown, $1.54 for Velocity, 51 TNA Impacts. On 527, Scott, mm-hmm. it was a movie released, and it featured a lot of wrestlers. Do you remember which one it was?
A lot of wrestlers in 05. Was it The Wrestler?
It was not.
Or maybe that came out later.
That was way later, yeah.
Yeah. 05 with a lot of wrestlers?
Hmm. It had three wrestlers in it.
Really?
Well, technically four, but three that you would know. It had a budget of $82 million.
Jesus, really? $82 million.
It's the highest grossing comedy remake of the box office era.
And it had a lot of wrestlers in it? Wow.
It starred Bob Sapp as the fourth wrestler. It starred Kevin Nash. It starred Bill Goldberg. It starred Steve Austin.
Oh, The Expendables?
No, that was way later, too.
Yeah. Who the hell? They were in it? Oh, Ready to... No, it wasn't that. It wasn't Ready to Rumble. That was before. 2005. Nash, Goldberg, Austin? $82 million budget? Wow, how am I blanking?
The original starred a former ring announcer from WrestleMania 10.
Oh, Longest Yard.
Yes.
Longest Yard. That's right.
Yep.
I forgot that. I forgot they remade that at first.
TNA had Hard Justice on 5/15. Main event, AJ Styles defeated Jeff Jarrett to become the new NWA champion. History of Honor as well. May 13th was the final showdown. Bryan Danielson defeated Homicide. The next day, CM Punk beat Jimmy Rave in a steel cage match. And then Bryan Danielson left Ring of Honor after losing in a championship match. And that was it. Judgment Day Heat, Nunzio defeated Akio. So we thank you, Stephen Sutton. You can shuffle back off to the room with James Kenna.
That's right. To continue the rest of that Hard Justice card, Shark Boy defeated David Young. It was a singles match for a big number one contenders thing later on in the show. I'll get to that in a minute. The card proper, Team Canada defeated Apollo and Sonny Siaki. Michael Shane and Trinity defeated Chris Sabin and Tracy. Raven defeated Sean Waltman in a Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. Monty Brown and the Outlaw defeated Diamond Dallas Page and Ron Killings. The Naturals, Andy Douglas and Chase Stevens, defeated America's Most Wanted to retain their NWA World Tag Team titles. And we'll talk about, did we talk about it already? Yeah, we already talked about it. Of course, this was the team managed. But I feel like we did that show so long ago. Of course, this was the team managed by Chris Candido. Of course, he had since passed away. There was a 20-man gauntlet for the gold to become number one contender for the NWA World title. It was the team, guys were Abyss, Bobby Roode, Zach Gowen, Eric Young, Cassidy Riley, Elix Skipper, Shark Boy, A1, Chris Sabin, Petey Williams, Sonny Siaki, Lance Hoyt, Michael Shane, Jarrell Clark, Mikey Batts, The Outlaw, Triton, Ron Killings, Apollo, and BG James.
Screwed Mikey Batts and his stupid Blue Jays.
Yeah, fucker. Do you know who won this gauntlet match? Take a guess of those guys. What do you think?
I didn't listen to what you were saying.
Okay, that's right. I actually stopped paying attention while I was reading it. No, Abyss won. And then, of course, Mr. Sutton mentioned, AJ Styles defeated Jeff Jarrett with Tito Ortiz as special guest referee to become the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. That
and
took place
backstage and smacked Jenna Jameson across the face.
Exactly. And that was a week before this show.
That's him, right? He's the one that was married to her.
AJ Styles?
No. Jesus Christ. Tito Ortiz.
I think it was AJ. I wish AJ Styles was. No.
That's a sick fantasy you have.
No. Let's see. Was he married to... let me double check this. Was he married to... Relationship of children. He was married to... Yes, he did. He canceled another guest on at Brinko Ball. When he, the Corps refused
so it was
to
after
let
this,
him...
he started dating her.
Yeah, he canceled in November 12, 2006. In 2006, he began dating former adult film star Jenna Jameson. He canceled the November 12th appearance as guest of honor at the Marine Corps birthday ball when the Corps refused to let her in. Ortiz stated that he was in love with her. She was no longer in porn, and they were in a monogamous relationship. As of November of 2014, he's in a relationship with former Octagon girl Amber Nicole Miller. And yes, April 26, 2010, she was photographed with a bandaged arm. Amid accusations by both parties against each other, Ortiz accused Jameson of being erratic and addicted to OxyContin, while she alleged that he was abusive. Since the incident occurred, both parties have recanted these allegations that were made toward one another. And as of April 29, 2010, the investigation remains open.
And she said she married the wrong Tito. She really wanted to date Tito Santana.
Yeah. She wanted El Matador.
Yes.
Okay.
She wanted his horns goring her.
Yes. all right. Why don't we dive in?
You were screwed at WrestleMania 5. Come
That's
here,
right.
Tito.
You did the dark matches.
That's my warm embrace.
okay. We open with our first title match of the evening, JR. That is for the blue belts, otherwise known as the WWE tag team titles. And as you mentioned in the report, new champions. Who are they?
Eminem. Welcome back. Back again. Eminem is comprised of former Tough Enough winner John Hennigan, now under the name of, Johnny Nitro. Of course, he was also Eric Bischoff's toady for 2004. Mm-hmm. Indie stalwart Joey Mercury and former Tough Enough entrant Melina Perez. Melina was a model from Southern California, somewhere near Marc Claire and Grant Owens. So began her wrestling career in 2000. She tried out for Tough Enough in 2002, but missed the cut. Trainer Al Snow told Melina not to give up on her dream, and she listened, signing a deal with OVW in 2004. Joey Mercury made his wrestling debut back in 1996. Under the name Joey Matthews, he'd be a regular in the indie scene from his debut through 2003, including a stop in ECW during the final days. In 03, pulled off an interesting feat of competing for WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor, all within the span of a few months. By 2004, he was inked to a developmental deal and assigned to OVW. Hennigan decided to try wrestling in 02, applied for Tough Enough 3, eventually winning the competition. After a brief run as Eric Bischoff's assistant in 2004, he went back to OVW to work his gimmick as Johnny Nitro. The three were put together in late 04, and their gimmick was that they were Hollywood celebrities, which was elaborated by their entrance, which saw them surrounded by paparazzi, included a seductive split on the ring apron by Melina. After feuding with Matt Capitelli, they were called up to the main roster in April. And speaking of April, on April 14th, Carlito debuted his own talk show segment as a shot at Roddy Piper. His first guest was Rey Mysterio, who had lost a tough match the week before. During the interview, Eminem made their way to the ring for the first time. Melina introduced them to the world and hinted that they were aiming for Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero's tag titles. Mysterio insulted Melina, leading to a beatdown by Mercury and Nitro. And the next week, Eminem requested a title match, spray-painted Eminem on Eddie's lowrider, and the champs obliged. Eminem defeated them to take home the titles in their very first televised bout. On 5/19, Mercury lost the singles match to Bob Holly to set up the title match here against Holly and Charlie Haas. Mm-hmm. And also mentioning Haas, his final pay-per-view appearance here released in the Mass Purge on July 8th. He will return, though, in a year. So, interesting little ditty there about Eminem. Mm-hmm. And I find them interesting watching him here because, you know, nowadays, developmental in NXT is such a big deal. All these guys come up, get shipped down. They're working on gimmicks that we're all privy to. But I feel like Eminem was one of the first. You know, we had the wave of, like, Cena, Batista, Orton. But Eminem, to me, was, like, the first wave that honed a gimmick in the developmental territory that you heard a lot about. Like, I remember hearing about their gimmick quite a bit. And I remember, you know, people wondering how it would translate, stuff we hear today, you know, how it would translate to the big time.
Right.
Would they give them all the pop? And I remember hearing that they were going to look like stars when they came up, you know, like, do you recall that talk, that chatter? Did you get that feel when you saw them come out here?
Yeah, I did hear a lot about that. And OVW at this time was definitely gaining some traction as a legit feeding ground, not just for the guys in general, but for the gimmicks that they held.
Right.
Now, I'm pretty sure at this point that Paul Heyman was down there. So, obviously, you know, this was no accident that he's down there and this really great gimmick with two good workers stayed the way they were and came up. So, I do vaguely remember hearing a lot about this from OVW. Now, back then, I don't remember us having a feeder outlet to watch it.
No, we definitely weren't. Well, I mean, you know, there were tapes and stuff of people that were in the area. But I just remember reading about them online, like Eminem, and how they had this gimmick that made them look like stars. Like, I just remember hearing that, the concept, the look, a lot of hype behind them, that they were really going to push them hard, and we get that right away. Again, the first really hype developmental product that comes up fully in character. I thought Melina had a star look and presence about her right away. You know, she felt like a big deal. She didn't feel lost. I think she's one of the few divas or women that really came in that wasn't a veteran, that felt like she had control of the situation right out of the gate. Like, I mean, not a tremendous promo, but enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She had everything down versus a lot of the ones that come up and just look lost for a while. So that helped Eminem's cause as well. Holly and Haas still chugging along. Odd choice, I thought, for an opener. Haas is still great, and they really missed an opportunity with him. We talk about him getting released, and you think back to when him and Benjamin showed up in 03, and you know, how great they were with Team Angle and the World's Greatest Tag Team. And it's just, once they split, he just seems so lost. I mean, they've used him for stuff. We had all the, you know, shit with, was it Jackie and Dawn, and now this, just kind of still teaming with Holly. Just
right.
Felt like, yep, he could have been a little bit more, even like a US or IC level contender. I think what burnt him, and I want your take on this, do you think he was just burnt by the depth? Like, is this a guy that if he was around in 98, 99, maybe he gets a little bit more just due to attrition? I mean, was he at around at a time when the mid card was stacked, or do you think maybe not because it was starting to thin out by 04?
Well, I mean, let's look at the perfect example. His partner, Shelton Benjamin, was on Raw, which obviously had kind of a more loaded upper card, and he's doing perfectly fine. I mean, he was immediately booked strong. He would eventually, of course, become Intercontinental Champion. And you could argue that Haas could have got equally the same shot at, on SmackDown. And you can't say anything about, well, Shelton had better mic skills. He most certainly didn't.
Right.
But Shelton persevered anyway on Raw. So it's hard to explain why Charlie Haas didn't get the shot when SmackDown clearly had a thinner roster of guys that he could have thrived under. So it's kind of perplexing, JR, to figure out why he didn't get a shot on SmackDown, because the roster was obviously, star power-wise, was much lighter.
Very thin.
Than Raw was. And meanwhile, Shelton Benjamin was thriving. So, strange.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to figure out. They're both equally good wrestlers.
Agreed.
You know, both solid college guys, of course. Shelton in Minnesota and Charlie at what us Big East team, Big East fans call The Hall. And just didn't, I don't know. Very strange.
Well, him and Holly control early. The crowd is pretty locked in here right out of the gate. Holly lays in some stiff chops to Mercury as the crowd's in delight. Eminem double team into control with some smooth offense, and they really have the characters and mannerisms down pat right away. You can see that they had put a lot of practice into this gimmick. Cole talks about Holly's repaired neck as Eminem starts to target it. Haas makes a hot tag, dumps Eminem to the floor, and hits a plancha into both of them. Haas looks awesome here. I thought he was like full of fire and flying all over the place. Good closing segment. As things break down a little bit, Holly runs into the post and falls to the floor. Eminem starts to show their refined teamwork and heel tactics and hits a snapshot for the finish. I thought it was a really spirited opener with a hot crowd. I thought it was a really good pay-per-view debut for Eminem. I thought Haas looked awesome here. It surprised me because when this started, I was like, oh, why the hell are they doing this as an opener? But the crowd heat and the work of Haas and the star presence of Eminem made it really kind of get the show off to a good start.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, it was a good tight 8 minutes. You know, you're dealing with, again, a good worker in Haas. And, you know, Holly's Holly at this point. He's just, you know, serviceable. But Eminem just had the look. I mean, they had, you know, the big flowing, you know, fur coats and the belts, you know, tucked into their crotch and all this other, you know, it fit perfectly in the hot Melina with the heels and the leggings and the split and everything. It was a perfect package of the three of them. And I think, you know, we talked about how 2004 was just utterly brutal, mm-hmm, in the tag division on both shows, but SmackDown in particular. So this is a breath of fresh air that we really needed.
And she was different too. I mean, she had a different look than some of the girls that they brought in during the, after the Diva search and stuff. The gimmick, the presence, just everything about her felt a little bit more refined and different than, you know,
right,
think of the women we saw back at like No Way Out in that Diva search thing or whatever.
Oof.
It was. All lost. You know what I mean? Like Melina comes in and immediately you can just tell she kind of knows what's going on. And
right,
her look was different than all them. So it was good. It was a good move. It was good to bring them up on SmackDown. I think as opposed to Raw, I think that was a good spot for them.
Yep.
More guys their style to work with. So. So that's it.
So there you go. So Eminem retains the WWE Tag Team Championships. We do not go backstage here, right? We go right to the next match? No. Okay. I know we go backstage
a couple times. Oh, that's coming.
Yeah. Next match, this one kind of like totally threw me off. I don't even remember this feud at all. you mentioned one of these guys, and that was Carlito. And mm-hmm, he is taking on a guy who he was trying to get under his charge and failed at it. Give us the backstory.
Well, this is on 5/12. Carlito had Big Show on his cabana and offered him a role as his muscle. Show was insulted and turned him down. Carlito took out his apple, but Show snagged it and bit it first. As he started to chew, Show started to slow up and then collapsed, as it was implied that the apple had been poisoned. A week later, Carlito introduced Matt Morgan as his new bodyguard, and the two assaulted Big Show and left him laying. If you remember Morgan, mm-hmm, he had been around back in, was it like 03?
Yeah, because he was part of that Brock's team at Survivor Series.
And this is his final pay-per-view appearance. He returned to SmackDown on April 21st using a stuttering gimmick that he was defensive and violent over, and then hooked up with Carlito on 519, taking on the role of his bodyguard. He'd be released on July 5th. Upon his release, he spent some time in Japan and Europe before eventually heading to TNA, where he kind of became a star. So,
yeah, he was there for a while.
Good on him. But the stuttering thing was absurd. I mean, I'll never really get what they didn't. I don't get how they didn't make things work with Matt Morgan. He's like in their wheelhouse. Big,
yeah.
Good looking, young. You know, like, I mean, he was like what they look for. I don't know. And he was homegrown. Like, that's a weird one to me.
Yeah.
How he got away and never came back.
Yeah. I feel like they over dyed his goatee and his beat and his hair. Why did they just let him be? I mean, I thought he looked fine at the Survivor Series in 03, even if they just wanted to kind of send him back to OVW and let him kind of sit there for a while till they really found a good spot for him. And instead,
yeah, they bring him up as Stuttering John and then.
Yeah, it's fucking oaf. I mean, it would have been great to see him. You could have brought him up in 04, give him this, you know, throw him in with Jindrak and loot the reins and make him Kurt's crew. I mean, just have all this muscle around him. Very weird. I agree with you. The homegrown guy, ripped. Mid-20s, just bizarre. Absolutely bizarre.
Odd times.
Yeah, it's a shame. But he is here, just not in the match.
True that. Interesting feud. Like we said, Carlito seems very overmatched, but just based on size, to start things. Matt Morgan back in the mix as a bodyguard. Decent role for him. Could have been more, like we said. I like the build of Show eating the poison apple, even though you have to really make the leap that Carlito figured Show would steal the apple and eat it. I guess he figured he's a fat guy. He'll take the food. I don't know.
So I was thinking that too when I saw that.
But I like the idea of it. It was unique. Morgan, I thought he looked weird as well with the dyed black hair and goatee. Good point to Cole. By Cole, as to why Carlito needs backup, because all the shitty starts out of the cabana. Everyone hates him. So you need someone to back him up. I thought Show looked weird with the mustache as well. That was kind of a unique look for him. Carlito dodges early until Big Show catches him and dumps him in the corner with some chops. Big Show's offense is basically just throwing Carlito around and hitting some chops. Carlito sticks some shots but can't sustain any offense. Big Show's all over him, hits an avalanche in the corner. We get a ref bump. Morgan comes in, hits an F5 on Show, which is impressive. And Carlito steals the win. And this is really just a squash, and they pretty much say the only way Carlito could win was by cheating. Fine for what it was. The crowd was into the chops by the Big Show, but really not too much going on here. And I don't know. I was kind of surprised it made Carlito look this weak, but I guess he's a honky-tonk man part two. I don't know.
I think the one thing that stands out for me in this match is obviously – here's an interesting question, though. Let's rewind for a minute. We were talking about, you know, why they felt they didn't give Matt Morgan the push he wanted. However, they let him, of all people, F5 Big Show. Number one, they had him do a big move on Big Show. Secondly, they used, you know, the finisher of a guy who had just left a year earlier, and right around this time, legally, things were not great between Brock and the company. So obviously they were, you know, doing their usual middle finger nonsense. So it begs the question, did they have something planned for Matt Morgan? Why would they have done that? Why would they have had him, you know, execute a huge move on Big Show, including a move that, you know, was just heavily used by a guy who's now gone and obviously left a little acrimoniously? You know what I mean? I mean, maybe
sure
they did
plans. Yeah, I'm sure they did, but
you know,
I think things change when they do that. I mean, we'll talk about that purge in a couple months, but I think they just started looking numbers and figured he wasn't worth the return. And
yeah, I guess
wasn't
not
really working, but I'm sure they probably planned a feud with him and Show would be my guess. That was going to come out of this, I would think.
Yeah, weird, very weird. So anyway, Carlito wins cheap. Match isn't much, just under 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And let's move on. I don't even remember that this match was on the show, to be honest with you.
So we head backstage, Booker is prepping with his wife, Charmel. And Charmel receives lingerie as a gift from Kurt Angle, and Booker flips out. And we'll pick up this disturbing story shortly.
So weird. All right, next, our second title match of the evening, JR, as the Cruiserweight Championship is on the line. Your champion, as mentioned, Paul London, taking on the resident Cruiserweight Slug, who needs to be shoehorned into everything, it seems like, at this point. How did he get here, JR? How did old Sluggo get this title shot?
Back on March 29th, Paul London took Chavo Guerrero's Cruiserweight title on Battle Royal. On May 12th, Chavo got revenge by pinning London in a six-man tag match, setting up their bout here. And yes, Chavo just played out, man. Go away. Paul London, new Cruiserweight champ. I thought it was about time. Great choice to have him as our champion in this division. And, you know, I'm sure we're being a little unfair to Chavo because, you know, we saw him pass this for like years, so it's still really annoying. You know what I mean? That makes sense.
Right.
So it's unfair, the hindsight that we spurned on him. But I remember at the time, even, it just felt like there's so many other guys I'd rather watch than Chavo Guerrero. Chavo targets the back and ribs. And London, very easily to root for, should certainly be the showcase of the division. Has some explosive quick spurt comebacks. London catches knees on a 450, which is a good spot to push the story of the match along. Chavo starts targeting the ribs some more, hooks on an abdominal stretch. London gets a nice belly-to-belly throw but can't take advantage and makes a pretty good comeback after that, picking up some near falls. Chavo almost steals the win by using the ropes, but London blocks and counters the gory bomb. Chavo rolls to the floor. London tries a somersault senton but splatters hard on the mat with a gross bump there. Chavo follows with a suicide dive, battle on the top rope, and Chavo gets shoved down, and London hits the 450 for the win. You know, despite how stale Chavo was, the match actually felt fresh and was pretty good, and I think that has to do with London being pushed to this level. And I think this should be it for Chavo for a while, I wish. Let London run wild in the division. Don't take the belt off him. Let him have matches like this on every show, something we should have been doing for a while. So I like this. Good stuff here. What did you think?
Oh, I liked it a lot, too. I mean, you know, Chavo, when you need him to, he can amp it up a peg or two and to put on a good match. And, you know, Chavo's a little bigger now. Of course, we all know 2005 was the year that, you know, the pharmacy was open. So, you know, he wasn't even looking like a cruiserweight anymore.
No, he was ridiculous.
He was, yeah. And Chavo and Paul London was fantastic. And, you know, even his kind of his spazzo way of doing things. Mm-hmm. I think it worked perfectly. I thought he was it was a finely put together match. I think London kind of worked, even if he had to slightly work down to Chavo's speed. Obviously, Chavo's not 1997 Chavo, but he's still, you know, he was working a little slower and, again, probably out of his element. But the match definitely did have a good flow to it. And I thought London did very well. And it gave him a good amount of time, almost 11 minutes. So I gave him a decent amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. And I like London a lot. And, you know, at this point, Cruiser division's in a state of limbo, I guess. I mean, Ray is not in the division at the moment. You know, Spike's gone. So, you know, it's probably a little bit of a dearth at the moment. So, I mean, as much as we're going to break Chavo's balls, I guess there's really nobody else to put in there at the moment. But hopefully this is it. And, you know, London can move on to some other guys and have some fresh matchups. So there's definitely some future here for Paul London if the division can kind of you know, beef up a little bit. But Paul London does retain his Cruiserweight Championship with a very good match against Chavo Guerrero.
We'll see if Chavo is one of the purged. sadly not.
No.
So backstage again, Booker stalking around looking for Angle. While he's out of there, Angle assaults Charmel and promises he'll have her for himself after he beats Booker here tonight.
Figured I'd actually theme it tonight.
And I watched The Replacements the other night. It was on. That's when Shane finally makes his move, and they have Madden and Summerall doing the commentary.
That's right,
like a bad porn movie.
Pretty awesome. God, that movie's great. Did they ever make? I gotta go to a site. They usually have sites where they have like sports movie like uniforms. I wonder if they have a. What was it? The Washington
Sentinels.
The Sentinels. I need a Sentinels jersey with Falco on the back.
He's got a heart. Miles and miles of heart.
Miles and miles of heart.
That's what we need, he says. We need heart. Miles and miles of heart.
We need the limey.
On 5-5, Kurt Angle found Booker's wife Charmella backstage and complained that her husband had cost him a title shot at Judgment Day and told her he would be challenging Booker for a match at the pay-per-view. Booker would accept, and the two had a brawl that ended with Kurt trying to trap Charmella in an ankle lock. A week later, things got bizarre as Angle informed Booker that he wanted to have perverted sex with his wife. Later that night, the two men fought, but Angle took off during the match and snuck into Charmella's locker room. Booker followed, and when he entered to check on his screaming wife, Angle assaulted him and took him out. On 5-19, Teddy Long informed Booker that Kurt had been banned from the arena and that he'd be suspended if he didn't apologize to Charmelle via satellite. Charmelle then ran into Mark Jindrak, who told her not to take Kurt seriously, but that Angle did have a fetish for gutter sluts. An incensed Booker destroyed Jindrak and beat him in a match. Later that night, Kurt joined via satellite and apologized, saying he was on fire after WrestleMania and couldn't handle not earning that title match, blaming that on Booker. But then he changed his tune, saying Charmelle molested him last week, and she was indeed a gutter slut that enjoyed kissing him. After some more perversion, the segment came to a close with an angry Booker destroying a TV. I want to have bestiality sex, Kurt Angle says. Weird twist in this story. Charmelle's now with Booker, but odd angle for Angle to make him suddenly a creepy pervert and rapist. I don't know why.
I mean,
I know they try and kind of say it's mind games, but like gutter slut still catches me off guard when I hear it. You know what I mean? Like it's
gutter slut.
Cheap gutter slut. I mean, I get that it was all about revenge, and you can kind of rationalize that Angle's just trying to screw with Booker, which is fine, but I don't know. I don't think we need an Angle to be like a weird stalker that, you know, wants to have bestiality sex with Booker's wife and calls her gutter sluts.
No. I don't know. I would have been disappointed for your boy. Kind of got caught in some strange... Well, I don't know. Maybe it's Kurt's version of Katie Vick. Who the hell knows? It's about the same thing, except Charmelle's alive.
Weird
and,
shit.
And a weird person, and a real person. so, I don't know. I mean, going in, and I know you'll give your analysis in a moment, at least I hope this would lead to a pretty good match, because, you know, both guys are good workers, right. So at least if a good match comes out of it, we can excuse the other stuff, but...
Well, Booker gets off to a hot start. He jumps Angle immediately, which I liked. Makes sense with how the angle's been. Immediately pounds on him. Angle's mouth is busted open. Cole talks about how Angle feels Booker cost him the title match, and the Charmelle stuff is Kurt getting creepy for revenge. Kurt gets very little offense, and Booker's just all over him with a very aggressive attack. Booker avoids an ankle lock, drapes him over the top rope, and cracks him with a scissor kick to knock him to the floor. Kurt shoves Booker into the post to finally slow him down, and then grounds Booker with a chin lock and body scissors. Kurt starts breaking out a bunch of suplexes, and then we get a long wear down spots from Angle. Reverse bear hug. And I thought it was cool to see Angle work the stuff on the mat. But with the build, it kind of felt like it should have been more of a squash. We'll talk about that in a minute. Because you couldn't really do that with Angle. So Booker comes back with punches and a stiff kick to the face. Get a close near fall on a bookend. Booker fires up, breaks out a spin-a-rooney. Angle gets back to the suplexes, but Booker hangs in. Booker sneaks out the win by getting a shoulder up during a suplex. Kurt beats down Booker after. The crowd boos Booker a bit after Booker got the win. So Angle then grabs Charmelle's wrist and handcuffs her to the ropes, and this gets really disturbing here. I mean, what I didn't get is why no one else made the save. We're just waiting on Booker to recover and make the save. He then handcuffs Kurt to the ropes, and Booker whacks him around. Charmelle slaps him and then kicks him in the nuts. You know, I'm torn on this because it should be a more decisive Booker win when you look at the storyline. The match was solid. Two veterans working a pretty good hard-hitting style. But then if you're going to have Angle lose, why put him in this feud? Because he's so hot coming off Mania. You just had him tap out Shawn Michaels clean at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And then you put him in this feud where with this ridiculous build that screams he should just get killed. And he gets some grinding offense, which makes sense because he's just trying to keep Booker off of him. So a lot of things make sense. They just don't make sense put together. Like, don't take a guy that's coming off that big win if you need something for him to do, just give him a feud with Booker over Booker, you know, costing him the title match, and Angle just beats him. Well, like, if you had wanted to have Booker win, it should have been a squash. But you can't squash Angle, so why do the feud? That makes sense? Like, it just, the whole thing is just kind of silly. That they could have found someone else, I guess, is my point, if they wanted to do this weird, you know, rapist Angle. I don't know why it had to be Angle coming off of what he had done at Mania and what they were, how they were setting him up for the year. It felt like a very weird detour for him.
I almost think, like, the entire SmackDown roster was set up for something at this show in, like, the spring, early summer storylines. And Kurt and Booker were kind of left, like, what do we do with them? I don't know. Well, I mean, there's no title involved. How do we really... I got to only make Kurt, like, a dirty perv. Kurt a dirty... Man, well, I don't know. Yeah, let's make him a dirty perv. And he'll call Charmelle a gutter slut. Yeah, that'll work. He'll call her a gutter slut. I mean, it's like... I almost feel like the two of them... everybody else was covered on SmackDown. And these two were the only ones left kind of bobbing in the water, you know, without anything to kind of, you know, get them in, you know, into the fold. So this is what was left. So it does kind of make no sense. And the way the storyline is laid out, Booker should have beat him in like 5 minutes and just mercilessly beat them.
Right, but you can't do that with him.
You can't do that to Kurt. No, absolutely not. Not after beating Shawn at Mania do you do that. Yeah, and it was almost like they got painted into a corner roster-wise because there's really nobody else. I mean, what do? You make Jindrak the pervert? No, no one's going to buy that. I mean, you give Kurt the pay-per-view off and, I don't know, a Booker face, I don't know, maybe somebody in the next match instead of who was put in the next match. I don't know. Very strange. It really doesn't make any sense that just for this little pay-per-view window, Kurt's a dirty, disgusting perv. It just makes no sense. I think a lot of it was because there was just nothing else on the roster that they could have those two of them do. I mean, where else do you put Booker at this point? You know? I don't know. Very weird. Very weird. So, anyway, Booker wins.
The thing was, he's not even... he didn't even do anything at Mania. My point is, he's not heated up anyway. So yeah. Why even bother putting him in this feud?
Were you surprised by the length? 14 minutes?
Yes and no, but they really needed to fill time with something. I mean, the card ends up being better than you would think, but they needed something here. So, yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me. That's why the angle didn't make sense. You know, it's like, just let them go out and wrestle. If they need to fill time and, you know, you want to have Angle hang in a match, just let him beat Booker in a regular match without this nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I honestly.
I like Jindrak using gutter slut.
Cool, I get to say that? Sweet.
He's into gutter sluts. Yeah, it seems like a weird use of Angle based on where he was coming from. That's all. And the match is pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed the match. And even the Angle grinding, like I said, grinding Booker down made a lot of sense, too, with them trying to...
What a great song.
Could have been his theme for the night.
Yes.
But anyway.
Do you remember the awesome band?
Then Jodeci.
Incorrect.
Wasn't Jodeci Freak Me?
Nope. Silk.
Oh, that's right, Silk.
Silk.
Silk great the song. Shocker.
Silk the Shocker. I love that song too. So there you go.
Yeah.
Booker T wins and whatever. Let's move on. Next up, JR, our third title match of the evening. The United States Championship on the line, your champion, which he has held since, after No Way Out, Orlando Jordan, OJ.
OJ in the van, in the truck.
Was there still a cabinet? Well, we'll get to that later.
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure there was still. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there is.
Okay. His
Paramore.
Opponent, probably could have put Booker here if you really didn't want him in this mess, but how did we get here?
Special needs Nazi caveman. Heidenreich. Shortly after he suited Booker, Heidenreich began to have a change of heart. His poems became a bit happier, began making friends with young fans, and inviting them into the ring and having them sit ringside during his matches. He defeated Orlando Jordan on 5/19 to earn the title match here. So Heidenreich started basically becoming like a bushwhacker with this like march he did with the arm, the Popeye arm back and forth, and he'd have the kids come in, just super lame. I mean, really, he's just like a comedy jobber with that march and the poetry and the kids. I don't know. Like, would you let, you know, if you ever had a kid, would you
did
let
you him? Say comedy Nazi? Is that what you said?
No, comedy jobber.
No, I thought you said something about Nazi.
He is a Nazi. He's a special needs Nazi. That's what he looks like, tongue hanging out. Like, he's basically a bushwhacker. The march, licking the kids and all this other stuff. It's just stupid. It made no sense. I was digging him as the heel. Like, and if he really wanted to go face, I mean, I don't know, just... seemed like a weird turn for, again, a guy that had some potential that could have been used differently. Put him in a tag team with Matt Morgan. Why do we have to make him Luke? You know, it's just, I don't know. I hate that march with that arm. I hate it so much when he makes the kid come in the ring and do the stupid thing. OJ's still rocking the U.S. title. Again, this is a mess on paper, but Heidenreich's been surprising in some of these matches. Mm-hmm. OJ jumps him to starts hammering away and starts talking shit to the kid, which made me laugh. Heidenreich hits a reverse sidewalk slam for an air fall. OJ works the neck with a suplex and headlock. Not much heat as Heidenreich hulks up with his goofy marching, which is even stupider. Heidenreich gets some brief spurts, but Jordan maintains control. We get an awful blatant spot with OJ drawing his initials in the air as Heidenreich whirls him up for an air fall. He just like gets up and starts drawing OJ in the air randomly. Stupid again. OJ gets a DDT for the win. A heatless match. Anticlimactic finish. OJ's reign has been terrible. Heidenreich's friend is all upset at ringside, and then she gets Heidenreich to get up, and they march around. I thought this was a mess, and this is coming from someone who's actually enjoyed Heidenreich, since his, you know, the feud with Taker, and then the match with Booker at No Way Out was pretty good. But this this has been a turn for the worse for him. I did not enjoy him at all with this.
No, the babyface run was probably not a very smart move. Giving him a U.S. title match does nothing for Orlando Jordan. I mean, if you're trying to pump this guy up as, you know, decent mid-card heel champion, this is not the way to do it. I would have put Booker here and had, honestly, I would have put Booker here and had Orlando be the perverted guy going after gutter sluts. And just maybe giving Kurt the show off, to be honest with you. That's what I would have done. And see, that makes more sense. I think you have Orlando and Booker in a U.S. title feud and have Orlando be the kind of perverted, you know, I want a bestiality, you gutter slut. I think that would have fit perfectly with Orlando. Because
you can have Angle just kill Heidenreich if you want to keep him on the show.
Yeah. You know what? I would alternate, you know, flip-flop those opponents. Have Orlando and Booker for the U.S. title.
Or just have Booker, Angle, and not do the stupid slut angle. Like, as a match, it's fine. And Booker doesn't need the win. Like, who cares at this point? Like, Angle needs to stay strong. He just went over Michaels. You're keeping him in the title picture. You got big things planned for him coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why does he need to become a crazed rapist? And I get that they kind of sold it as it was, you know, he was looking for revenge and playing mind games and fucking with him. But I don't know. I just don't think it was necessary.
Mm. Probably not. But if they want, I mean, if Vince was in that weird mood and kind of dug it, I would have had Orlando and Booker and have Orlando be the weird savant and have Heidenreich be a good guy and just have Kurt like just snap his ankle or whatever. I think that might have been a better choice, because how they, I mean, it's curious how they just kind of get Kurt out of this and move on to what we have next, which we'll talk about in the next show. All right, why don't we take a break? Five matches in, thumbs in the middle so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, other than the last match, I thought it's been pretty good so far. Though the first three matches were pretty good.
Crowd pretty good, right?
Well, 2 out of 3. Carlito, I mean, even Booker Angle is fine. So really, Carlito Big Show was kind of inoffensive, and OJ Heidenreich was pretty bad, but those are both short. The three longer matches have all been good. The crowd's been really hot. That's impressed me a lot, and the commentary is good too. So yeah, an enjoyable show.
Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back after the break, our last two matches, one of them, of course, the main event for the WWE Championship, and a feud that was burbling to the surface and then finally exploded. That and more coming up after the break. But first,
because
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard and the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN, Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
All right, Nation, we're back checking out Judgment Day 2005. Two matches left. First of all, we're going to take a little break, talk about PlaceToBeNation.com. Lots going
on.
A lot to talk about here. A new episode of Between the Sheets, episode number 16, November 3rd through the 9th, 1994. That is Zellner, that is Bix, and that is Dr. Lucha, Steve Sims from Figure Four Weekly, looking at that week back in 94. And that includes Randy Savage leaving the WWF. So be sure to check that episode out. Should be a good one. Joel Barnhart, our MLB expert, was here with his end-of-season power rankings. You can check him out on Sports Evolution podcast.
Yeah, he'll be on this week.
There you go. Brian Bayless was around, recapping PWG's Battle of Los Angeles 2015. Stage one.
Brian Bayless was sleeping under the park bench, but he did do this.
He was hanging around, typing up a review. This week in wrestling, Johnny and Pete thankfully wish Steven good luck in his future endeavors as they look at the past week for November 7, 2015. Seinfeld chugging through season 6, episode 6, The Gymnast. New Exile on Bad Street, number 18, Requiem for the Invader. That's Zellner, Dylan Hales, and El Boricua from PWO.
Bad Street.
check that out. Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continued with the fifth Saturday Night's Main Event from March 1st, 1986, the big boxing match with Cowboy Bob.
A big Bundy run-in. Yeah.
Check out
great
that
show.
Series. And, of course, you great can click show. On the right-hand banner of PlaceFanation.com, our free ebook for our Volume 1 Vintage Vault Refreshes. Mm-hmm. So be sure to visit that. You can download it and enjoy those all in one easy reading spot. Wrestling Culture Podcast, 2015 Hall of Fame reaction. So that was a big hit. Got a lot of plaudits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that
accolades.
The word? Accolades.
Acolytes.
Across the internet. So be sure to check out that. Dylan and Dave breaking down the newest Hall of Fame entrance to the WONHOF. TJ McClune Show, episode number 12. Andrew W.K., the musician, king of partying, joined the show this week, talking about how he got into music, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and much, much more. So be sure to check that out. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web is there for you, as always. And our excellent WD Network Adventure Series continued last week as well with World Class 12-14-82. So lots to visit PlaceFanation.com. We have a new Sports Evolution this week, a new Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast to be back this week as well. So lots to love, lots to check out, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. And remember, click that right-hand banner picture of Amazon before you go shopping. Holiday season's coming up. A lot of Christmas shopping beginning already. A lot of holiday shopping in general beginning already. Mm-hmm. Just stop in, click that button really quick. Doesn't take anything, an extra 2 seconds, and you can help keep Place to Be Nation chugging along. And Scott, it's been a while, like we mentioned, since we've had a tournament. And with the holiday season here, we thought it was time to do another one. It should be kicking off in the next week or so. And that is PTBN's. 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 What do you think? Any guesses? Any guesses? Anything?
Coolest Wrestling Tights.
Coolest Wrestling Tights is incorrect.
Damn.
You have another guess.
That would be a good one, though.
Anything.
Coolest Christmas Movies.
We are looking at Place to Be Nation's Holiday Tournament Spectacular.
Yes.
And that includes everything under the sun. Holiday movies, holiday food, holiday traditions, holiday music, holiday TV specials. 128 entries. All battle in a big jumbled, shuffled mess to determine the greatest piece of the holidays here by Place to Be Nation. So be on the lookout for that in the next week or so. We're going to take that right through the end of the year. So we
happy birthday!
It's not the same unless you're mumbling it like Maritella.
That is quite true. Yes.
You're not Jason. So there you go. Newest tournament on its way in the next week. Be sure to stay tuned to the Facebook page and Twitter for all of the updates.
I had that in a box set. All those.
In the box.
In the box. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. That better be ranked.
The what? The who?
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. Oh, come on. I know it's slightly older, but I can't believe you. You're usually a savant of Christmas, regardless of the era.
Don't you age shame me.
You age shame me. You're the master of age shaming.
I speak the truth.
What does it matter? It's still
you can't handle the truth. All right.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas? We're going to watch that. I'm going to watch that. I'm going to bring that. G's going to watch it. She'll love it.
Otter's, I work around the clock.
Otter's playing instruments.
By the way, I meant to say, we talked about Dennis Leary before. I watched Draft Day again on vacation.
I got to watch that. I haven't seen that
yet. I'd say it holds up. It's really not that bad.
I got to see it.
It caught a lot of shit. I think because it came out during like the Goodell shitstorm and everyone hated him really bad.
Yeah.
So everyone just wanted to trash the movie. But it's not that bad. Leary's pretty good. And
Is it affecting by the fact that it is the Browns and not like an actual good team?
No, you kind of want to see them pull it off, you know. I mean, it's funny to think like they actually have a good draft, and you know, at the end, not the spoiler for anyone, but at the end, everything works out, and you're like, they're still going to go 4-12.
That's funny. But,
they're like, this guy's going to get hurt week fine. 3, and they're still going to have, you know, Josh McCown as a quarterback. But anyway.
Ouch.
Yeah, but that's what Dennis Leary is now.
Okay. Oh, can't wait for this tournament. Yeah, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. All right. Why don't we move on? Two matches left here from the Target Center in Minneapolis, another building where you can buy a lot of Christmas gifts, Target. But go to Amazon first, through PlaceToBeNation.com. This feud was inevitable. I mean, I know we've seen matches from these two already, but now we have finally seen the tide turn. Backstory, JR.
The feud has taken a lot of twists and turns since the two men met at WrestleMania. On April 7th, Rey Mysterio was wrestling JBL in the first round of the Championship Challenge Tournament. Eddie was in his corner, and he lost his cool and ended up getting his partner disqualified and eliminated. The next week saw Mysterio get beaten down by Eminem and lose his cool. Guerrero, who claimed he had car trouble that prevented him from making the save. Later that night, Ray accidentally cost Eddie the tournament match against Kurt Angle, and the next week they would hash out their issues but lose their titles to Eminem, and that is when things boiled over as they shoved each other around after the match. A week later, they would make up again. Despite Chavo doing his best to get between the two friends, they shook off Chavo's intrusion and went to the ring for a rematch against Eminem. Eddie would show his true colors during the match, though, as he stood on the apron and refused to get involved, letting Ray get abused and pinned. After the match, Eminem brutalized Mysterio as Eddie slowly left. On 5-5, Mysterio confronted Eddie in the ring, smacked him in the face, and demanded a match, but Guerrero refused. Ray accused him of being scared to lose, but Eddie would not cave. Chavo got involved again, blaming Ray for the deterioration of the relationship. And later that night, Mysterio defeated Chavo in a street fight. After the match, Eminem and Chavo beat Ray down once again, but Eddie made the save. After the assailants left, Eddie clotheslined Ray, ripped his mask in half, and dropped it with a vicious suplex on the ring steps. The next week, Eddie cut a great promo with a Mysterio mask in his hand and the bright spotlight on him alone in the ring. He told Ray he would take his life if he showed up at Judgment Day, and hammered home his point by destroying a jobber and indie star Jimmy Jacobs later in the night. Eddie would deliver one more great promo the week before the show to put the bow on the tremendous build. So what did you think of them finally pulling the trigger on Eddie? And I like that they had him snap because you just couldn't beat him.
It was fantastic. I think after Eddie had lost the WWE title the year before to JBL and then kind of lost his rematch in that cage match in the Dunk. After that, he seemed to have kind of lost his edge a little bit, lost his sizzle for a few months. And I think even after, you know, kind of rejuvenating in early 05 and then they won the titles at No Way Out, I think it was the writing was on the wall that Eddie needed to be kind of a sleazeball again to kind of get his juice back. And that is exactly what happened and worked out perfectly well, I think. Eddie got the well. When I do my comments on the match itself, I'll get more into Eddie in particular, but there was no doubt that that he needed to this needed to happen. There's no doubt about it. Helps Ray, too, because he was kind of floating around.
Agreed. So. Feud is heated up. Eddie snapped, viciously turned, needed a much-needed heel turn. Eddie brings his family into it as well. Feud instantly gets personal as Eddie's out for destruction in a win. Intense stare down. Parts of the crowd are still behind Eddie. Ray has his ribs taped and unleashes a flurry of kicks early, wrestling very angry here. Eddie takes over on the floor and goes to work on the ribs, hitting a spinebuster into the announce table. Eddie hooks an abdominal stretch. Anger in the match is very palpable. Eddie gets very cocky as the punishment continues, doing boxing dances and grabbing a single leg crab while his knee was buried in the ribs. Ray makes a quick comeback, grabs a near fall on a springboard splash. Eddie fights through it, grabs a lion tamer and then a Boston crab. Eddie sets up for a brainbuster on the stairs, but Ray shoves him into the post. Ray hits a 619 around the ring post, and then Ray sticks with high-impact offense during his comeback, gets a near fall with a seated senton. Eddie hits the top rope superplex, and his great pacing here is as quick but not at the same time. Nothing feels wasted. It's perfect execution by both. Chavo comes out and distracts the ref. Eddie grabs a chair. Ray hits a dropkick and then knocks Chavo down and hits a 619 on Eddie. Tries for a springboard dive, but Eddie just smashes him with the chair in a great nasty spot. DQ finish I thought worked here because Eddie's so fucked in the head about beating Ray that he doesn't give a shit. And finally just loses it and smacks him. Eddie bashes Ray with a chair after the match. Excellent match with perfect storytelling and pacing throughout. Eddie's heel turn is fantastic, and this feud is very smart booking.
The key thing here is twofold. Number one, we've talked about how the cruiserweight division's kind of flat, but honestly, Ray at this point really doesn't belong there anymore. His star power goes well beyond needing to be cruiserweight champion, which he's already done anyway. So there was really no need for a cruiserweight title anymore anyway for him. So Ray needed to kind of be elevated out of that division and into like the actual mid card before moving on to other things. This feud did that. Number two, and this is a big one because it keeps this feud legitimized. We already know that Ray and Eddie are awesome in the ring. We know that. It goes all the way back to 97. We get that. But if you remember, Eddie's big heel run, you know, 97, 98, 99, Eddie had the mannerisms down of just a good, for lack of a better term, to borrow the nickname of one of your personal favorites, he always could get that loose cannon look out of his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And when he needed it, he could really be off in another time zone. And when he beat the crap out of Ray and did those suplexes on the stairs, which were, those were vicious, vicious. Eddie knew how to sell them. And Eddie, the switch flipped, and Eddie didn't have that look when he was a babyface through, you know, the end of 03 into all of 04 when he was champ, because he couldn't be. He had to be kind of ha-ha-ha Eddie. But when he needed to turn on the sicko look, Eddie had it. And that's everything in this feud, because it goes beyond straight competition for Eddie. He just needs to win, and he needs to beat Ray down. And that's exactly what he does. And he gave that look like, it's just consuming me, and now it's taken me, it's taken my soul over. And that's the crux of this feud, is that Eddie has just hit a plane that, not only for him, but for Ray as well, puts this feud to another level. Now, we could have kept going along with this, but as we will see over the next, you know, 3 months, it goes totally off the rails, but which kind of ruins it a little bit. You know, you're still going to get great in-ring out of them, but as we, and we won't get into it now, we'll talk more about it through the next few shows. Keeping it as this, just two former respectful rivals, now bitter enemies, good friends, better enemies, and just going at each other, probably would have survived. I think the best part, and I wonder what would have happened down the line, and we'll get to that when we talk about the fall and what happens. This would have been a great feud to continue on with if you want to talk about a belt, but we'll get to that. I won't get into that now. But for this moment, everything is clicking with these two guys, because we already know that they're perfect in the ring. They work great together.
And they keep despite the feud, they've adapted to it.
Right.
Yeah, and this match was awesome. I think it was better than Mania. Do you agree there?
Yes, it is better than Mania because of the viciousness of Eddie just amping it up, the violence level. And the one thing that I'm really impressed with, and I mean, this might be repeating because I may have said this at WrestleMania, but in case I didn't, both guys, obviously, I mean, it's been 8 years since their big battles in 97 and, of course, the epic match at Halloween Havoc. But obviously, these guys aren't little anymore. Eddie is at least 30 pounds bigger. Ray is at least probably 20 pounds bigger, for, you know, reasons we continue to allude to. So they're not exactly cruisers per se anymore. But they found a way to adapt to that size change and put on an equally great match that's completely different. Honestly, JR, if you watch Halloween Havoc 97 and this match back-to-back, both 5 stars or close, and two completely different matches. That's the mark of impeccable workers, and that's what both these guys are.
No, match of the night so far for sure. You know. They really gave him a lot of time to tell the story, 18 minutes, and again, for once, I really didn't mind at all the DQ finish. I thought it worked here because the whole story has been about Eddie just snapping because he can't beat Ray. So the fact that he gets frustrated and just at this point, he just has to kill the guy, so he just bashes him with a gross chair shot. Yeah, great feud. It's definitely, you know, Ray's best stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the company. At least since the SmackDown
since
6.
Since Kurt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, SmackDown 6 and Kurt, yeah.
So, since end of 02, I mean, this has been his best stuff.
Yep.
Finally giving him something beyond just, you know, fighting for the Cruiserweight title.
Right.
Giving him some meat, finally.
Yep.
In a legit feud, so.
Right.
It was good. It was really good. I enjoyed it.
So, Rey Mysterio wins by disqualification, but as you know from watching it, this feud far, far from over. All right. Time now for our main event and the WWE Championship. Our rematch from WrestleMania 21 in Los Angeles. And we have a special stipulation added to this, which was probably very, very well needed. JR, our build.
This is the first time the I Quit stipulation was used in a WWE title match since the infamous chair shot buffet between Mankind and The Rock at the 1999 Royal Rumble. And on 4-7. So, yep, good.
4.5 years. Well, I should say almost, you know, 5.5 years. Man. 5 years.
On 4-7 SmackDown, JBL came out depressed that he was no longer champion and it was just a common thug was now the champion. he needs to be champion because he says his fans want it. JBL got interrupted by Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Booker T, Big Show, and Kurt Angle, all saying they wanted the first crack at the title. JBL tells them to get in line because his rematch is first. Out comes Teddy Long, who said JBL that he was so confident he was going to defeat John Cena at WrestleMania, he waived his right to an automatic rematch. So Long said if he wants that rematch, he has to earn it. Long said that there would be a series of matches to determine a number one contender. Three singles matches that would be whittled down to three wrestlers who would do battle in a triple threat to determine the contender. Later in the night, JBL defeated Ray. The following week, Kurt Angle defeated Eddie. And on 4/21, Booker T and Big Show wrestled to a double DQ to round out the triple threat, which was now a fatal four-way. On the 4/28 SmackDown, JBL won that four-way to become number one contender. The following week, JBL came out wearing the WWE title, the belt he carried, as Cena now had a new belt. We'll talk about that in a moment. He said most people would just quit when the chips were down and wouldn't try to grab their dreams. Out comes Cena, who says he doesn't quit either, because at Judgment Day, their title match will be an I Quit battle. On 5/12 SmackDown, JBL comes out to rip Cena for having a parental advisory on his new CD, which we'll also talk about in a moment. Whereas JBL's book is the most popular book since the Bible. He says he will bust Cena open at Judgment Day, make him bleed. JBL says when you make your opponent say, I quit, you own their soul. Cena ran down to the ring, and they brawled until the entire roster came out to break them up. On 5/19, JBL aired an awesome anti-John Cena ad, saying that he talked to Cena's fans on the street and that he is more profitable role model than Cena could be. After the PSA, JBL came to the ring and faced Scotty Tuhati in a match. JBL got disqualified but didn't care as he got Scotty to say, I quit. Later in the night, Cena defeated the Bashams in a handicap match, and he and JBL jawed to end the night. And on 4/14, John Cena was given a new updated WWE title belt, complete with a spinning WWE logo in the center, similar to the custom U.S. title belt he had in 04, and that's why JBL carried around the old title. And, of course, that spinner belt would be held for quite a while and would be piss off many internet fans during that time as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
On the heels of that title win, Cena recorded a CD of rap cuts called You Can't See Me and a video for the song Bad Bad Man premiered on the 5/12 SmackDown. It was an 18 spoof featuring Gary Coleman and also featured his new theme song. And the elusive Bumpy Knuckles was also part of the music on that CD. I'm going to take a break and a drink. Do you want to talk about the build? Do you want to talk about the new title, about the CD? Have at it.
Bumpy Knuckles.
That was a big get for him, Bumpy Knuckles. Yeah, that guy didn't come out for just anyone.
Bumpy Knuckles. Well, the build was good, although I love how sometimes storyline logic goes out the window and you scratch your head. Obviously, it has been evident since the dawn of time that former champions get the automatic rematch. You know. I love how on Raw, Triple H tells Batista the rematch is lock and stock and barrel. But on SmackDown, JBL has to earn the rematch, even though he technically had one in place. I don't get it. I know you have to make matches for your show, but still, lack of logic still sucks. The belt was an utter piece of trash. And in the time we've known each other, I have consistently bashed that belt. It's a piece of crap. I actually liked, and before anyone says it's an anti-Cena thing, I loved his U.S. belt. I thought the U.S. belt was really slick looking.
Mm.
The world title was not very good. And we'd have it for, Jesus Christ, almost 8 years. Close to 8 years. It was ugly. Utterly dreadful. His album was catchy. Obviously, his entrance theme was good, but I liked Bad Bad Man, and I liked the video, and Bumpy Knuckles. But
it was a decent album. I mean, at the time.
It was. No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. But that title belt is just an utter piece of shit. And I actually loved the Brock belt or the JBL belt. I always loved that belt. Always loved that belt.
Well,
so
here we are. I quit. And like we talked about at Mania, was this the match that should have been there? We'll see. Mm-hmm. So JBL hangs around the title picture using the double belt gimmick. I thought the stip was a smart idea after the mess at Mania. Cena quickly becomes pushed as a crossover star. It's like immediate album, various events, music video. It all comes out. And he gets an epic entrance here on the flatbed DJ truck with the trademark mixing the ones and twos as they come out. Matt work early as Cena grinds a headlock and armbar. JBL gets frustrated and regroups. JBL hits a DDT, but Cena fights back, spills to the floor into the crowd. JBL hammers Cena as first to ask about quitting. Crowd is behind Cena so far as JBL whips him with the belt and then chokes him against the post with it. JBL tries to berate Cena into quitting his project or to protect his career. Cena backdrops JBL through the announce table. Cena gets cut short by a disgusting hard chair shot to the head. He gets busted open with a really gnarly blade job, just pouring blood everywhere. Crowd is hot for Cena as JBL stomps away and lands three big clotheslines from hell and then chokes Cena with his own chain. Cena has this a legit crimson mask here as JBL berates him to quit, smacking him in the head with the mic. Cena smacks JBL and makes a fired-up comeback, including an FU. JBL leaves and stumbles towards the back, and Cena follows and slams him on the hood of the car. JBL chokes Cena with a cord and with a nasty visual there with the bloody face. Cena yanks JBL through a TV screen, and JBL does a nasty blade job as well. Cena tosses JBL through the limo window. Crowd is just rallying here. Cena hits a suplex on the roof of the limo. Cena rams JBL to the open door multiple times and then just rips the door off. Cena drags JBL to the flatbread. I have a sweet chicken teriyaki and flatbread. But JBL
got Panera on the side.
JBL hits DDT. Battle continues until Cena rips off a pipe off the truck and stalks JBL with it until he quits. Surprising finish, but it made sense after the intense brawl. Super bloody, vicious fight, and never lagged. The crowd was super, super hot for Cena. Cena smashes JBL with a pipe anyway and knocks him through the pane of glass that was part of the set. I thought this was a very legitimizing win for Cena, much more than Mania. Great brawl to close the show. And I don't know if this match would have worked at Mania based on how stacked that card was, which is why I always said maybe they should have held off in that Cena title win. But this is certainly the moment that really puts Cena over the top. He has his album, music video, doing sporting, you know, crossing over to different events, and now has this marquee biggest win of his career and this bloody brawl showing he can do whatever it takes. And I enjoyed it. What did you think?
First off, I was going to tell you that Mac Truck is a great wrestler's name.
Yes, he is.
But I think an even better wrestler's name is Flatbread. with his manager, Guacamole. Grilled chicken and avocado. Yeah, I mean,
it'd be even funnier if he came to the ring on a flatbread.
Yes, imagine gigantic.
Oh, he's free carrying a bag of lettuce.
Free Panera coupons. Yeah, I mean, they knew exactly how to legitimize Cena here. I don't want to say that I think they thought that they shortchanged him at WrestleMania. Clearly, we know that they kind of did, but they didn't really want to admit it. And with this undercard, they were a little 50-50 on probably, other than Eddie Ray. They really needed to go out like crazy. And they absolutely did. JBL did the absolute right thing here. He put over Cena strong. Both guys bled like fucking pigs. Mm-hmm. When you say Crimson Mask, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, they both of them, by the end of the match, you didn't see any skin on their head, on their faces. It was all.
I don't know. I was trying to think back to Judgment Day 04, the other bloody brawl with JBL and Eddie. Eddie's was like sickeningly gross.
Yeah. This was wrestling gross, which is like, okay. I mean, bleeding in general, relatively speaking. But like Eddie's was like it was all over the place. Cena's stopped after a while. It just stayed on his face. Eddie was just, it was just pouring out like, you know, Vince at Vengeance 03. But they went all out and like using the truck and using the limo, and they knew exactly what to do. They knew exactly what to do. And they went out and put on an incredible match. You know, at this point, obviously, match of the year is Kurt Shawn from WrestleMania. But I'll tell you something. JBL and Cena tried pretty hard to tie that vote, because this match was incredible. And I'm curious to see, as we continue through the calendar year, JR, when we get to the end, where this match sits, like match of the year.
I think there's a lot of WWE level. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I know TNA had some great matches. I know ROH had some really great matches. From a WWE perspective alone, it's a pretty good year for them as far as like really great matches. They have a bunch that are in the conversation. And this is certainly one of them, something that Cena really needed. And this crowd was tremendous all night. Right through this match, all behind Cena, which was good because JBL was, you know, a booable heel as there is. But they were great the whole night. And at the end of the show, I mean, you know, I guess we can talk about the show right now. It was really good. I liked it overall. I thought you didn't really have too many dead spots. There's only two bad matches, but combined, they were less than 10 minutes. The last two matches ate up, you know, when you count entrances and all the other stuff. I mean, nearly an hour, or at least nearly 45 minutes, and they were both great. You know, between 4 and 5 stars, both of them.
Yeah.
London Chavo, very good. Booker Angle, very good. The opening tag was hot. So a very forgotten show, a show that I had no expectation for coming in. I thought that this was in the pile with some of the other ones we saw in 04, some of the ones we're going to see. I just kind of always chalk this up as, well, it's got one great match and nothing else. But
right.
But it really surprised me. I enjoyed watching it across the board. I thought the crowd was great. Commentary was very good. And we got two classics at the end.
Yeah, definitely. No, I definitely put this on. I mean, let's see. We're five pay-per-views into the year. You could argue this is probably number two behind Mania so far. Well, let's see. Wait, five pay-per-views? One, two, six. Six pay-per-views in so far. And this is probably second behind Mania. Better than New Year's Revolution. Better than the Rumble. Better than No Way Out.
Yeah.
And probably better than Backlash.
Yep.
Yeah. It's probably the second
Rumble
best.
Rumble is pretty good, though. It's close to the Rumble.
It's close to the Rumble. Yeah. I think it's slightly above the Rumble.
Think
so. It's at worst.
The Rumble match was great, though.
Rumble match was great. But I don't know, was there another match in the undercard that could back up Eddie Ray? Probably not, but that's all right. It's at least top three, maybe top four, but still. Mania might be the one legit show that's probably better than this. Otherwise, it's a close tie for second. Yeah. So check it out on the WWE Network, or if you have the DVD. It is a great show. Couple of duds, but nothing ridiculous. You get to see Eminem's debut, you know, pay-per-view debut.
Plus, it's good to see SmackDown kind of back to having a good show.
Yes. First time since Vengeance 03.
Been a while. I think the best one. Even No Way Out was okay. But, this was very good. So we'll see if they keep it up. So, all right, that brings an end to this one. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with One Night Stand with a very special guest who is there alive. So we'll talk to him.
Ivan Hammerstein. I've been looking forward to doing this show for a long time, JR. I'm getting pumped.
Yeah, it's one that's been on our wish list for a while. So here we are, finally at its One Night Stand 2005. So before then, New Dangerous Alliance. Mm-hmm. New Sports Evolution, all the other pods, check those out as well. It's good to be back. Thank you for joining us as always. So for Scott, I'm JT. We are out. We will talk to you in 2 weeks' time from Hammerstein.
With Silk in the main event.
Silk freaking on Heidenreich, who's banging Charmel animal style with Kurt Angle filming.
And Jodeci singing on the other side of the room.
And Orlando Jordan having shitty matches in the corner.
Eating Panera with his tag team partner, guacamole and flatbread.
Still I'm the most fly. I went so much they wanna know who I'm coached by. Every day approached by chicks when I was no top. Wanna give me so side, but I'm like, don't try. I see the hisses and the disses when I go by. But see the misses on my wrists when I float by. Self-control and I can't tell you no lie. Tryna find a soulmate, you end up being so tired. I make my money, man, without the coca. Living la vida without the loca. I'm down south, so they show me country love. And I ain't even country thug. The people give me daps and hugs, so it must be love. And I love the country grub. It feel good to hear people singing welcome back. And I ain't even selling a track, cause I'm that Harlem cat.
Names have all changed since I've been around, but the game ain't the same since I left out. Since I left out,
ooh, you know we need. that.